Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. The Thunder just lost to the Rockets in five games. Andre Roberson shot 3 for 21 from the line. 3 for 21. That's 14% of his free throws. Just awful. Why was he on the court long enough to shoot 21 free throws? Because his defense was outstanding. He did a great job on James Harden. And I bet you can guess where I'm going with this. A player who plays awesome defense but can't shoot free throws? Does that remind you of anybody in Pistons history? Does that ring any bells? In honor of Andre Roberson shooting 14% of the line, I have a little bit of a trivia question for you. Which player in Pistons history, and we're only going from 1964 on, because that's as far back as Basketball Reference has data. Take that for data. Which player in Pistons history had the lowest free throw percentage in a playoff series? Minimum 10 attempts. Give you a few seconds to think about it. I don't want to blurt out the answer. Which Pistons player, since 1964, as far back as we have data, had the lowest free throw percentage in a playoff series, minimum 10 attempts? Okay, you ready for the answer? Dennis Rodman. Nope, it was not Ben Wallace. It was Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman shot 2 for 10 in the 1988 second round Pistons-Bulls. Pistons still won that series 4-1. But Rodman was awful from the line, 2 for 10. Ben Wallace, if you're curious, yeah, he came close. He was 6 for 28 in the 2006 second round. That was Pistons-Cavs when the Pistons won in 7. 6 for 28 is 21%, though. Just slightly better than Rodman's 20%. Ben Wallace also shot 25% in a playoff series, but that was once he was with the Cavs in 2008. That was the first round against Washington, if you're keeping track of Ben Wallace's career. He's the only player to shoot 25% or worse in two playoff series. But Rodman had the worst one for the Pistons. And Roberson did remind me of Ben Wallace. Not in style, obviously. Roberson is a wing and a really good perimeter defender, and that's where he specializes. Wallace, a very different type of player. But this whole conundrum of, hey, how much defense do you need from a guy who can't make free throws, who's vulnerable to hacking? Maybe the hacking wasn't quite such a big deal when Wallace was in Detroit, but there were times he went to the line and it was a problem. And we lived through that debate, and it's interesting to see it come up with Roberson again. Roberson has a different twist, though, because he made his three-point shots. He made his two-point shots. He was pretty efficient from the field. The problem was not his efficiency on three-pointers. It was the volume. The Rockets largely ignored him, gave him a ton of open threes, and he only shot a few of them. You know, it was a nice percentage, and he converted, but he only shot when he was super confident in his shot, and he was open a lot of times, so it bottled up other things. The Thunder had trouble because they were playing beyond Roberson. They were playing 4-on-5. He was just standing there afraid to shoot three-pointers too often, and it bogged down the Thunder's offense, and when the Rockets really wanted to bog down the Thunder's offense and grind it to a halt, they just intentionally fouled Roberson and sent him to the line. It was a big part of the reason Houston won. A lot of things went into that series. But that was one of them. It'll be interesting about Roberson's value going forward, what that does. I would imagine he'll still be too expensive for somebody the Pistons could pursue with their mid-level exception. But I'm not 100% sure on that. He's tough to read. The fact that he was so tough to play in scheme four in the playoffs because of this free throw shooting, because of his poor three-point shooting, it's a factor. And, you know, no matter how good he is defensively, it's a big thing weighing him down. I still think he's going to get 8 digits per year pretty comfortably and be fairly above that. And so the mid-level exception, which will start at about $8 million, I don't think it'll be enough. But somebody like Roberson, I'd like to deal with those problems. I'd like to work it out because he makes his three-pointers when he shoots them at a decent clip. It's a lot about getting his confidence up in those shots. That, look at these open shots are these open shots. There's not a huge difference in the ones he's passing up and taking beyond how he feels about them. So I'd like to go after him. If you can get him for the mid-level exception, the full mid-level, I'd do it. I don't know if the Pistons are willing to spend their full mid-level exception, because that'll put them into some trouble with the luxury tax. They're already going to be around that range with what I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's contract's going to be if you don't unload somebody else. So I don't think they'll necessarily even use their full mid-level exception, but I'd love to have Roberson. What he and Caldwell-Pope could do defensively with KCP guarding point guards, it does leave a problem for the Pistons in that the top wing scorer for the other team is often going to be in an advantage, where they'll be defended by Reggie Jackson if they're a little smaller, or if they're the bigger wing, it'll be by Marcus Morris or Tobias Harris, guys who are more suited to be combo forwards. So a lot of teams have a couple wing players, at least one, sometimes two, who are going to be mismatches for the Pistons. Roberson could defend any wing in the league. He can defend a lot of point guards, too, when KCP goes to the bench. It'd be such a nice defensive team. Yeah, it would add to the shooting problems and those complications. But like I said, I would take on those risks.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Okay, let's move back to draft talk. We've spent a lot of time these last few episodes doing it. We're going to keep up with the draft talk. And today I want to highlight two players who could be there for the Pistons at 12 or 13, where Detroit is most likely to draft, who are dealing with major injury questions. The first is Harry Giles. Giles is a 6'11" power forward from Duke. He spent one season in college before going pro. And at one point, maybe about a year ago, it looked like he could be the number one pick in this draft. He's had multiple knee injuries since. It's part of the reason he didn't play as much at Duke. And so there are just a ton of questions about him now. He didn't really look that good at Duke. I think that was mostly the knee injuries. But the question is, like, when will he look good? Like, when will this pick up? Because scouts just raved about him before his freshman year, before these knee injuries. And he was dealing with these since high school. This is not something new for him. But he just looked like the complete package. Somebody with excellent athleticism, a very good motor, and just a good feel for the game. That everything was just coming together for him, and he would take off. Now, he wouldn't be the first player who looked like that in high school who didn't make it in college or didn't make it in the NBA. So I wouldn't say he was ever a sure thing. But he had all the tools you would want. Somebody who definitely looked like he could contend for the number one pick. And there were just such rare glimpses of it at Duke. He's so far removed from that status. It's tough to evaluate him. And it's tough to evaluate the second player I want to talk about, although we have a lot more to work with. And that's OG Anunoby from Indiana. Anunoby is 6'8" with a very long wingspan. He looks like he could guard every position on the court, point guard to center. I'm not sure you'd want him at those extremes all the time, but so much of NBA defense is based around switching. You get somebody like that on the court, and you get five of those guys who can switch, it just makes everything so much easier. And when you can switch everything, if he could switch everything, that would just be so significant to a defense if you have other switchable players around him. The Pistons do a little bit. To varying degrees. Andre Drummond, he's well on the perimeter for his size when he's up to it, when he's engaged, when he's focused, when he's committed to that. The asset of a benefit of running so many combo forwards out there, those guys are versatile inside and out. KCP, yeah, you know, he can get pushed around a little bit inside. There's some limitations on how he can switch there. But he is a dogged defender. He can hold his own. Reggie Jackson, I think, could do a better job than he has. He has some strength for a point guard. I think he could switch much better. But if you had somebody like Anunoby in the lineup, that could open up a lot of things. His offense, I'm not so sure. Anunoby shot very well on three-pointers by percentage as a freshman, and then very poorly this year as a sophomore before getting hurt. For him, it was also a knee injury. He's a high flyer. He can get up above the rim. You get him in transition. He can finish above the rim. So there's something to work with there. But here's my concern for both Anunoby and Giles, that so much of their game is based on athleticism. That they lose anything athletically, that could be a major step back for them. And it's not to say they're only athleticism, have no basketball intelligence or anything like that. It's just that they use their basketball intelligence well with their athleticism. These guys have not proven themselves as reliable standstill shooters or excellent passers or just doing things that really work well without athleticism. They need to be able to move well, to get off the court, to move around the court. They need to do those things to have an impact. So much of their stock is going to be based on medical testing. So these might be two of the hardest prospects to peg from the outside. If you don't have access to that medical testing, who knows? Like, the upside for Giles, if like everything checks out, is a top 10 pick. And maybe it would have been higher if everything checked out sooner and he showed more at Duke, but there are some question marks because of that. But if everything checks out, the upside's a top 10 pick. Anunoby, it's probably somewhere similar, maybe in the lottery, if he's healthy. If not, they could be undraftable. If there are long-term concerns about their athleticism, if there are short-term concerns about their athleticism and their ability to play now, they might be undraftable. Now, I think that's the extreme because you never really know. Like, you can have all the medical testing, you can have all the data, but you just don't know. You can't know what somebody will be. So both these players are probably going to go in the first round somewhere. It's just tough to peg where they could go. That could be right in that 12-13 range for the Pistons. So they're worth keeping an eye on, scouring for any information that becomes public that we can get about their medical testing. But that is the big question mark about them. So those are those two. We have even more draft prospects to go through here on Locked On Pistons. So we'll have that throughout this week, some other stuff too. You can follow on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is David Locke, founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks so much for tuning in to your favorite Locked On podcast. We have something really special going on here. We are the only daily local podcast format in the country. And we are one of the only places for local companies to be able to advertise on a podcast serving the fans, the listeners that want your product locally. No other podcast network does this for you. And that's why we want you to advertise right here on your favorite Locked On podcast. Our audience is 98% male. It's about 77% between the ages of 25 and 54, and also 77% between 18 and 44. So you're hitting the core demographic. If your company wants men 25 to 54 or 18 to 44, then you should advertise right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We'd love to have you. Our rates are reasonable. It's all based on the amount of listens. So you can email me, David Locke, at dlock09@gmail.com, or contact your host. We'd love to have you aboard, joining in with the great success that we're having on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.